Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I am here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We are here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're here with Damian. You can find on Twitter at Damian Johnston. Our number one for the week is Samurai on Titan Comics by, pardon my pronunciation, French. But pardon my French, Jean-Francois de Giorgio.
Sounds about right.
And Frederick Genet.
Yeah, I think you got it.
Nailed it. Yep. See, I speak French. I'm cultured, people. I'm cultured. Our overrated, underrated for the week is Aspects of Being Almost or Over 40 for all the old men on the show here. I'm nowhere near it, so I don't know. We'll see if I find something to talk about there. But moving on. In case anybody was not aware, this past weekend was C2E2 here in Chicago, and be on the lookout for a special podcast on that in the coming days. That will be happening, so keep your eyes peeled.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
What we read? Are you anyone still reading Black Canary, or is it just me?
No, I still read it. I haven't read the newest one.
Okay, never mind. I won't say much. Is anyone else reading the female Thors?
I know. Forgot to keep picking them up.
Well, never mind on that as well.
I don't care. You can talk about them.
Well, I mean, it's kind of hard to get opinions from people. Well, I'm just saying. I mean,
gonna read them.
The Black Canary was a little. I must not have remembered the previous issue all that well because it went places I wasn't expecting, I guess, in the last issue. Still good, but just it wasn't expected. Which, and then, of course, with the Thor one, I've enjoyed it since the first one, even though they started from number one again. That's, you know, again, still really, really, I'm thoroughly enjoying that. Other than that and the number one, a lot of my reading time has been taken up by my best thing ever, so you're just going to have to wait till the end of the show for that. Brian?
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't do a ton of reading other than the novel I was reading last week, but I did. I bought the movie Black Mass with Johnny Depp, and I watched that a couple times already. And
a couple times?
Well, I watched it on Friday and watched it again last night. Now that I've seen The Revenant, I can honestly say Johnny Depp was better than Leonardo was in The Revenant because Johnny Depp was actually really good as Whitey Bulger. And it has that movie's got such an incredibly good cast that you have Corey Stahl from House of Cards. You have Johnny Depp, obviously. You have the guy from Fargo whose name escapes. Jesse Plemons, I believe his name is. And Benedict Cumberbatch, who's always good. So, oh, and Kevin Bacon. He's making the bacon.
Nice.
But yeah, that was a... I have to say, if you like that kind of movie, like Godfather, Goodfellas type stuff, then this is a little darker, but I recommend it. It's pretty good.
I'll check it out. I've been looking forward to it. I find those movies to be like always like a big chunk to bite on. You got to kind of like really pay attention.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, unlike Goodfellas or a Casino, where like the violence is almost like comical, the violent parts of this movie are really dark and really they feel very like dirty. Like, when it's over, you're like, oh, man. Like, even the parts in Goodfellas where, like, somebody gets shot, it's almost like, oh, my God, that was hilarious. Remember that part? This movie, it's like, oh, dude, I just want to cry a little.
Kind of like a Disney children's movie where they always kill off somebody right in the beginning.
I think it's like, because Johnny Depp wears these contacts to make his eyes really bright blue almost, so he looks dead in the eyes the entire movie. Plus, he's got this weird skin makeup that makes him look really old and wrinkled, or like really freckled. And he's just got this weird expression on his face the whole time. Every time he's like killing somebody, he's got this like dead expression on his face. Like, this is just work.
Like the Hannibal Lecter like expression.
Yeah, like
when he's killing those cops in the cage.
Stop.
Yeah, there's one part where he goes upstairs at a dinner party to talk to this guy's wife. Super creepy. And it's just, ugh. I've been waiting for him to do a movie like this again. So it's after all the Mordecais and the fairy tales and the chocolate factories, it's nice to see him do something that requires acting again.
Yeah.
Instead of just hosting a movie?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, I like that.
Oh, I didn't make up that. My friend had said that about Jack Nicholson. He's like, years ago he stopped acting and just started hosting.
That's pretty much, yeah.
Well, I'll probably steal it, so, yeah.
Yeah, please. Tom Doherty came up with that. He's quite funny.
I don't know him, but I like him.
Right.
Yeah, he's great.
Christopher?
Yo. Haven't read a darn thing.
Sweet.
Except Samurai.
Sweet. Well, how about you, Damien?
Well, when I picked up the number one, I couldn't just use my card for $4, so I had to buy a couple other things. I bought the third Headlopper, which I like that quite a bit, and the third issue of Last Contract that Ed Brisson, that's on Boom.
Yeah, that Headlopper seemed a little silly. I remember that was in the back of something else as like a little preview, and I read that, and I was like, this seemed weird. It's really... It almost feels like it's for children, but it's totally not for children.
Yeah, it's like a hyper-violent Adventure Time, sort of.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I got out of it.
I think you've sold me on this.
And so you've read first three already?
I'm sorry?
Did you read the first three already?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it's been out that long, so I take it you're enjoying it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, I love the art style. I think it's great, and it's super silly. I mean, silly in a good way. It's fun, you know? There's only four issues. They're pretty mighty issues too. I guess it was going to come out monthly in an 8-issue run, and they decided to combine them into four issues and have it come out like every 3 months, I think, or something like that. Someone tried to explain it at the comic shop, but yeah, I like it a lot. It's got a little bit of a Hellboy vibe in some of the art as well, but yeah, I'd say violent Adventure Time works pretty well.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, like I said, I've only read the preview, but that kind of seems like it would sum it up fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and The Last Contract's great. I mean, it's just, you know, the third chapter of an ongoing story, and it's violent and sad and it's gross. this is I can't remember the term I'm looking for here, but you know, there's one more issue to go. So this one, like a lot of horrible shit, really. Happens, so we can kind of see how it all resolves at the end.
It was almost like the climax.
Yes, almost.
But you know, there's going to be more, so it's probably half the climax.
Yeah, I suppose. Ultimate issue, I suppose. But yeah, it's the. It was good. It was. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how that story ends.
All right, sounds good.
And then I also finally read the Andre the Giant, Life and Legend. Comic that Box Brown wrote and illustrated.
I saw that, and I was actually... That came out, like, in December, didn't it?
I think so, yes. I think my wife gave it to me as part of a Christmas present.
That's what I was going to do for my brother-in-law, and I ended up not doing it, and I've just kind of forgot all about it until just now. So that was, like, a for real... That wasn't, like, a joke. That was, like, a for real thing.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Uh-huh. It's real.
I want to hear about it. Let's dive in a little bit.
Well, I thought it was great. The art's awesome. I love the art style. It's kind of sweet and sort of cartoony. And I think if you really know a ton about wrestling, this is going to feel a little bit light. I don't, but I know, you know, Andre the Giant was really popular when I was a kid. So there was a lot of that kind of always around. So I was able to pick up a lot of it before I'd ever read this. But it's, I think if you do know a ton, it might seem a little light. But I think for someone who's, you know, heard of Andre the Giant but never really knew much about his life, this will be kind of a nice overview. It just sort of hits the main points. It doesn't really dwell on anything too long. Like, you know, a run of like 4 pages might be 2 months of his life, and then the next 4 or 5 pages are like 2 or 3 years later. So it's, it really kind of jumps around, almost,
right.
you know, almost like little vignettes again. But there is kind of this overarching story of this person who wasn't supposed to live this long, and who had kind of a, you know, was kind of tormented a little bit as a kid and felt out of place, and finally found a place for himself, and then some of the problems he caused along the way. So,
okay, I think I might have to buy this now. I'm kind of intrigued.
It's got a, yeah, Mick Foley has a quote on the front.
Now,
I liked it, so.
Is there anything in there about them doing this for anyone else, wrestling-wise? I mean, not to totally be a dork here, but I used to, like, worship wrestling, so.
Yeah, and no, I don't know. You know, it's on First Second or whatever. The people that did, like, some Paul Pope books recently, but I don't know. I mean, I feel like this was Box Brown. Like, it was his, I feel like this was his, like, kind of labor of love. But it's got like an index and all this stuff in the back with all the references of everything he talks about. He like quotes like when exactly the David Letterman show appearance was. You can look that up. Like, it's pretty pretty comprehensive for such a small, kind of inexpensive little book.
I think I might have to pick this up.
Yeah, it's got quotes on the back from Matt Kent and John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats, who I guess is a big wrestling fan.
Must be out of my league on those. I don't know those two.
Ah, okay. You probably love John Darnielle. It's great.
Hmm. All right. So, like
you
I
okay?
said, yeah, I'm fine. Thanks. Okay. No one caught it. Whatever. Okay. The number one for the week was Samurai on Titan, and I believe this was Christopher's pick. Correct?
Yep.
Would you care to bring us into the world of the martial arts?
Of Samurai.
It's not the martial arts.
Oh, alright. Well, apparently, this is the second arc, I believe. No, or it might be an entirely new story. But anyways, there was a 4-issue miniseries previous to this one, on Marvel / Soleil back in 2008. Have yet to read those. Those are actually on their way here. But
on their way here, as in to your house?
To my house.
Okay.
My house.
Okay.
But reading this, this was a book with, I shouldn't say with very few words, but man, Takeo, the guy, the lone rogue Ronin, looking for his brother Akio. That dude is pretty darn tough. Especially when he's in that, like, I guess, restaurant, and, like, some guy is still looking for an apology because he bumped his shoulder out in public. He pulls out his sword so fast and closes it before this, and puts it in, like, sheaths it before this guy can do anything else.
I don't know. I feel like the guy in the beginning was quite the badass as well.
Oh yeah, they both are. That's Shobi, the gray haired male.
Yes.
But yeah. So the artwork in this book is fantastic.
It's one of those books that make me think that comic artists probably aren't getting paid enough because this guy's so good.
Yeah, the artwork in here is awesome. The only thing I would probably have liked to have seen is maybe like some really cool drawn out panels, but I mean the art is so good it's like I don't really care.
It's super technical, like it's just
it's really good. I don't know quite how to say it. I mean it's just it almost has like kind of like an antique look to it, but the color, but since it's colored it kind of, you know what I mean? Like, it looks like something that would have been, like, from the 70s. Like, 70s anime looks different than, like, I mean, obviously so. I mean, because of the technology, but...
Yeah,
It's a very good book. I like the fact that this comic was violent without being, like, straight up, like, gratuitous violence.
Yeah.
It was like,
no,
it was,
if people have read Lone Wolf and Cub, I'd say it kind of looks a little bit like that.
Yeah, I haven't, but I could see that.
Maybe less manga, but still, it has kind of a similar,
right
quality.
I've not read Lone Wolf and Cub, but I do own Shogun Assassin.
There you go.
That's another thing that like came to mind as I was reading this was that TV show from the 70s, Shogun.
Wasn't that a miniseries?
It was a miniseries.
Led by a white guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was the only, like, for some reason it just popped into my head. I don't know why, but yes, you are correct. It was a white dude, and there are clearly no white people in here.
It's terribly offensive.
It was Richard Chamberlain, who's the white guy in Shogun, by the way.
There we go, see? But for being, you know, has anyone ever seen Ninja Scroll?
No.
No.
Okay.
Is this a movie?
It's an anime movie.
Oh, yeah. I'm sad to say I'm very, very, very not well-versed in anime.
Well, that anime movie is actually really awesome. But that one actually reminded me of this, too. Or this reminded me of that. It's got the lone rogue Ronin kind of guy, you know, very mysterious. You know, doesn't say very much. It kind of reminded me of that. But I mean, I haven't read too many stories about samurais or like any kind of fictional stories. I mean, but since it kind of reminded me of Ninja Scrolls, it kind of like, I wouldn't say cliche for me, but it's like, you know, you get that mysterious guy who's like comes into town and no one really knows who he is or what he wants or what he does, and he whips out his katana blade and he's like a sous chef, you know, he's like an executive chef with it. I mean he hits the dude. But he's like, he hits him so fast, and like sheathes his sword so fast, and he tells the guys, he's like, "Don't worry." He's like, "I hit him with the, you know, with the dull end of my blade, so he never cut him."
Yeah.
But he did it so damn fast. But does anyone else have anything to elaborate on it? I want to review, but I don't want to give away the story.
No, it's fine.
I don't want to say what it's about. If anyone. I would say is if anyone's into anime.
Well, I would say that it's got the classic samurai story points. It's very much like something you would imagine coming out of Akira Kurosawa's film worlds. It's really well drawn and so far really well paced, even though it's only two issues, which seems like this could be a lot more. I think it's great. So,
Brian,
I don't know if it helps.
That was my reading it. I kept thinking. I mean, I'm not super well versed in Kurosawa. I've seen probably only half of Seven Samurai. I own Throne of Blood, and I've seen Rashomon, and. I watched a lot of the 70s grindhouse type movies, and it definitely has more of a Kurosawa vibe than a Sonny Chiba vibe. The whole time I kind of felt like the Kurosawa movies I've seen are paced in a certain kind of way to where they're almost operatic. And in a comic form, I don't really know if it... I had to read it a second time, but I don't know if it worked for me in a comic, though. I mean, it's not a... it's not an atypical... it's pretty much a straightforward samurai story.
That's actually the word I was looking for.
What?
I just didn't want to say it. Like you said, it is pretty straightforward, but...
Well, I mean, the samurai stories and the samurai films kind of informed the westerns that came in the 60s.
Right.
I mean, they admit that the Magnificent Seven was a direct westernized ripoff of the Seven Samurai.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, Fistful of Dollars, I think, is a retelling of Yojimbo.
Yeah.
And Last Man Standing is also, with the Bruce Willis movie from the 90s, is a redone remake of, maybe it's Fistful of Dollars as well, but the other, there's another movie that's a remake of Sanjuro, which is the same character as the Yojimbo character. But yeah, I had a big Kurosawa phase I went through. I watched all that stuff.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, the movies I've seen are excellent. I mean, he was as good as they made him out to be. I mean, I didn't really know of his existence till maybe the early 2000s, but I mean, you have to be in the mood for it. You can't just be like, I'm going to watch Kurosawa and then head out to the gym. I mean, you got to pretty much commit to it. But if you're willing to commit to it, I mean, it's definitely worth sitting through. It sounds like I'm going, it's a chore, but, you know, give it a whirl.
There's a lot of reading involved.
Yeah,
that is true. Yeah. Well, plus he's openly trying to do his own take on Shakespeare, which, you know, I don't know how everyone here feels about Shakespeare. I mean, it's not for everyone, I guess.
Well, unlike everyone else on the planet, I feel like I didn't have to read it for high school or college, so I just didn't. When it comes to Shakespeare, not samurai.
Yeah. That'd be great if that was required, like reading and viewing in high school.
Okay, this week we're going to read American Ninja Number 1, and then we're going to watch the movie. I mean, I don't want to be the oddball of the group here, but I don't really see it as a straightforward samurai. I almost got like a samurai/Vikings vibe, seeing as though they go to this island and they terrorize them. So, you know, give us some money or we're going to, you know.
No, I think the straightforwardness of it is the fact of, like, what I said is, like, you got that mysterious, you know.
Oh, the lone wolf scenario. Yeah, that's pretty
standard.
The
lone wolf guy comes in and, you know.
But, I mean, I'm not saying I've seen every single, you know, kung fu movie on the planet. But, I mean, I feel like a lot of them start out with, you know, like a narrative of what's the situation, what's going on. They give you a little backstory and then the movie kind of kicks in. Like, for instance, I just watched The Sword of Destiny. The other day, which is the Crouching Tiger sequel that's on Netflix. Oh, yeah. So I wrote the review. It's on reviewandroast.com. So, yeah. But anywho, but like, you know, you figure Crouching Tiger came out 20 years ago. Here's a sequel. They opened up the movie with like the narrative of what happened. And then, you know, the movie kicks in. But yes. Like, I don't know. Like,
that's
like you said,
kung
it doesn't
fu,
it doesn't feel like it translates well to a comic. Like, I don't know. Maybe a lot of the fast motion sword play didn't really come off too well. Plus, in the beginning, when the guy's walking,
I thought the sword play in here came off great.
Like, and here's one thing that I don't know. I just didn't quite understand. Like in the beginning, when they're like, "Oh, master, your boat is ready," and he walks out to the boat and gets attacked by like three or four people, and like nobody helps. Like he just, I don't know. I mean, I know he's supposed to be a badass and he killed everybody.
He don't need any help.
I get it, clearly. But then you're still getting on a boat with like 40 other dudes that are just.
I think
like,
it was
are
a test,
ready?
Actually.
It could be. It could be.
I think it was a test by that lord.
Could
because
be.
Because after he gets on, they say, you know, she, and I believe it is a woman, you know, she, the guy tells her, you know, yeah, this guy's probably the best we've ever had. He's
right.
Better than, you know, better than anyone that we've had prior.
No, she was definitely a woman. They referenced it later on. I don't know. I just, for the first, like, half of it, I just kept thinking, like, I have no idea what's going on right now. And it's kind of annoying me. But I was also kind of tired when I read it. So, I mean, maybe I just wasn't picking up on certain things. But, I mean, it definitely got better towards the end with the whole lone wolf and the bar fight and all that, like, kind of kicked it up a notch for me. But, like, I mean, it wasn't, like, something I felt I need to write home about, you know.
Yeah, again,
yeah,
from
I'm probably just biased to that world.
Generally, I enjoy those stories, and I know they're because you said it's similar to Vikings, and all those different cultural lores kind of informed one another as time went on. So I'm sure, like, samurai lore was informed by Viking lore, which was informed by some, you know, marauding gang of warriors prior to them, and
I don't know.
So
maybe it's part of it's because, like, when I think of samurai, I think, like, you know, like honor and, you know, you stick together with your clan and, you know, you do try to do the right thing, but here's an entire, you know, clan of people who come over and just terrorize this island every year just because why not? They're never going to fight back. Like, I don't feel like that's very samurai, I guess. Well, but I guess, you know, the lone wolf samurai who, I don't know.
If all samurai clans were noble, nobody would ever fight. They'd all just hang out and drink sake and, you know.
Yeah, but they usually end softball. They don't fight for the sake of, like, just stealing money and women from people. They do it for, like, you know, for power and, like, you know, I don't know. Or for the sword of destiny.
What? Or the sword of doom.
I don't know. Maybe I need to re-go visit it, but
re-go visit it?
Yeah, I was going to say something. I don't even know, but I don't know. I wasn't, like, super thrilled with it. I had higher hopes, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Again, I honestly, like, I love samurai movies, especially the more serious ones. And I just felt like being in comic form, a little more detail is going to get lost in between the panels, and that's kind of why I wasn't. Again, I read it before bed, so I can't say, like, oh, yeah, I totally grasped it all, and it was terrible. It was, like you said, the artwork's amazing. The guy's perspectives and his action sequences are just really... Yeah, they draw your eye, they keep your attention, but I wasn't expecting, like, some mind-blowing experience where I was like, oh, I've never read anything like this in my entire life. I knew what I was getting into, and you don't have to sell me hard on a samurai story. I love that sort of genre. I feel like those movies, the really good ones, they take their time, they're very patient, and in comic form, a lot of detail is going to get lost. Maybe I just didn't pick up on it, though, the first time through. And I'll go back and read it a second time just to, you know, see if I missed something.
The older couple is what interests me.
Well, I mean, like, again, the first time I read American Monster, I was like, nope. But I made myself go back and read it a second time before we talked about it, and then I got a totally different take on it and found a new appreciation for it. So I'm willing to give this one a chance because of the content that it embodies.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I liked it a lot. I think, like you said, a lot gets lost. I've watched a lot of samurai films, and of course those are all, you know, fictionalized or whatnot. But I know a little bit about the history just because I cared a little. But yeah, I mean, you do have to kind of fill in the blanks a little bit. And I think maybe my enthusiasm for samurai stuff really helped me kind of fill in those blanks, because I liked it quite a bit. But like I don't think I said this to anyone, but I was telling somebody that at my work, they're asking what I'd read, and I mentioned the samurai thing, and like, is it good? I go, well, honestly, it could be 10 pages of a samurai going to the grocery store and I'm probably going to be into it. Like, like it's just something I like regardless, so I'm pretty happy. It's like when they pull out swords, I was like, ooh, bonus, you know. I like the era. I like, you know, kind of the western-y vibe that all
the whole,
samurai
the whole
things
feudal
have all got.
Feudal Japan.
Yeah, I like that, and I'm
well, so
I'm
do
not
I.
Gonna, yeah, I'm not going to. I don't know enough about exactly how things worked there, because I know samurai sort of changed what they were, kind of changed through time. At one point, they were just sort of like, I think officers, like of the people who fought in the military, like the samurai were the ones who had like the highest ranking or like the highest class. What's the caste?
They were held in high regard.
Yeah, but I don't, you know,
it was a title like, you know, like it's like kind of like today if someone says, oh, he's a doctor, and you're like, ooh.
Probably nothing like that at all.
Well, hey, they both wield knives, just different sizes.
You know what I mean? Yeah, no, yeah, it is, because people are impressed by when they hear that someone's a doctor or a lawyer.
Oh, you manage at Domino's. Ooh. You like the
doctor.
You're like the samurai of fast food pizza. All right.
Samurai delicatessen.
So let me ask you this, though. What are your thoughts on The Last Samurai?
Oh, the Tom Cruise thing?
Yes.
It was not good.
Oh, my.
But I thought it was really
okay.
I thought it was a really interesting story. I think it was – I don't think the story or the movie itself were bad. I think Tom Cruise distracted from the story.
It was kind of the samurai version of Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
Strange white guy comes in and, you know, is the better warrior of everybody else.
He was not the better warrior.
I don't mind, you know, that kind of thing if that's going to happen, but it's, I don't know. I think there's a lot of times where movie stars really are a detriment to a story, although they sell tickets, but that was certainly one of those ones where I was just like, I can't take him seriously.
You just
like Minority Report, love to watch him run around. I think it's fine. The Last Samurai, I just wasn't. Yeah,
he just broke Brian's heart.
He did a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, because for me, that was the movie that made me dig and find Kurosawa and all that other.
Oh, yeah, I saw that much later after I'd seen all those movies.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying that that changes it entirely, but you know,
I don't know. I like
it, and then of course it made me immediately think of, you know, that Shogun miniseries as well.
I don't know. I mean, I liked it, but I don't see it the same way I look at those old samurai movies. I don't know. It has a different feel.
I think for me, because it introduced me to Ken Watanabe and the other guy that plays Uji or Uijo. I forget how to pronounce his name. It's been a while. I started looking at their filmography, and then from there, you know, what other movies? Oh, go get Sword of Doom. Go get Throne of Blood. I'm like, okay, done.
Yeah,
watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, I mean, I guess if you saw it after all the other ones, then it's kind of like, yeah, this is the honky version. No thanks. But
yeah, that's true. But Ken Watanabe, you're right. That guy is just so good. I've liked him in everything he's been in.
There's one scene in that movie where Tom Cruise is really effective, but I do agree with you. He is kind of like the token white guy that's supposed to help the movie gain an audience, which is kind of lame because he is really not a good actor.
It's like watching White Bread on TV.
Yeah, I've enjoyed movies he's been in, but it's generally not because of him, you know.
Fair enough. Still a little upset, but you know, I'll rein it in. And
would it make you feel better if we numbered it?
Yeah, that's fine.
Sweet. Chris, you go first.
I'm gonna give it an eight.
Sweet. Damien, how about you?
That's what I was going to say.
Wow. Brian?
I don't feel like it's fair to give it like a solid number, but I'll go with a 6 for right now.
What do you mean solid?
Because I feel like I should read it a second time.
Oh.
So I don't want to see like, oh, it was
maybe
this.
You should be more better prepared next time.
More better, Brian.
I mean,
More better.
Maybe you should be better prepared.
Well, yeah, Brian, you should way be more better prepared because... Like I said, it didn't really do that much for me. I'm at a nice solid 5 at this point. Like, I'm definitely, I'm not going any farther. That's a lie, and you know it. Oh, boy. So, as we have mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's kind of the time of the year where the convention circuit really kind of kicks off. So, in the meantime, there was an article done. Matt Hawkins was talking about the economics of doing a convention as far as, you know, for creators and exhibitors and blah, blah, blah. Now, I know last year we had a booth at Wizard World. If anybody's familiar with Wizard World, if you're trying to be on the exhibitor side, it is ridiculously overpriced. And if you're trying to go as a fan, it's still ridiculously overpriced. So, just saying, as far as that's concerned, as our booth experience last year, we spent a ridiculous amount of money, and I don't feel that we got our money's worth by going. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like money could have been better spent elsewhere. And that's kind of what this guy was saying, like, when it comes to some of these creators, you know, I mean, even if you're... A larger name where the con will pay for you to fly out, maybe cover your airfare, maybe cover your hotel. You still have to figure food, you know, booth cost, your time cost, you know, and
hotel.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it, and there's a lot you need to sell a lot to make it profitable. But if all you want looking to do is get your name out, and that's the one area I think we did good last year when we had a booth, is we didn't sell anything. We brought with a bunch of stuff and gave it all away. You know, and I feel like, you know, that's a good way to get your name out and get heard. And, I mean, it kind of worked, but I mean, I don't know, I just feel like sometimes some of these bigger conventions, as a creator, writer, whatever, you're going to take a back seat and spend a lot more money than you probably need to, because they pull in and spend so much money on celebrities. And, you know, when you have companies like Image and Marvel and DC that can afford gigantic booths, and to them it's, who cares? You know,
dropping the hat.
Yeah, they don't care. But, you know, when you're doing the stuff on your own, it's a huge expense, you know, and it can really, you really need to weigh the pros and cons here before you need to really Mosby this thing out.
Nice.
Right?
Well, I put this on here also because, I mean, when you said you used to go to conventions with Fantagraphics, what was, like, your take and their take on the whole experience? Or it probably was different back then, though, because it wasn't as celebrity-driven, maybe?
Yeah, it was certainly different when I went. I mean, the first year, you know, we loaded everything in a van and drove it from Seattle to San Diego. And it was worth it to hire a couple extra people and, you know, pay all that gas money for all those books to be transported. I mean, all that, it made sense. And then after that, we started shipping and flying. And then even after I quit, they even paid for me to, like, fly down and just hang out at the convention. So, I mean, certainly it was a different time because that would never happen now.
Yeah.
But it was certainly like, it was a big cost too, because we'd have a giant booth. I mean, at San Diego, we'd take up essentially an entire half of a whole section, because we had our Eros booth, you know, the Naughty comics. We had that, like, an inner booth inside the Fantagraphics booth, sort of wrapped around like a U. And then there was a little, like, inside that U was the sort of Eros area where you had to be an adult to go in. We'd sell, you know, tons of stuff there, and yeah, the creators would all come and sell a ton of pages and drawings and all that whatnot. Certainly a lot of money was made, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if it was a little bit of a loss. I think it's just kind of part of the cost of doing business.
I agree. And, you know, that's another thing they mentioned. I don't know if you guys all read the article here, but another thing that he was talking about, you know, at least, like, from an artist standpoint, you can sit at your booth and, you know, do custom drawings all day long for, you know, 10, 15, 20 bucks, whatever you're going to charge, and make a little more money back that way. But when you're strictly a writer and you're bringing books, that costs a lot to ship. That costs a lot, you know, extra gas, you know, because it's weighing down your car. If it's on a plane, you pay by the pound. You can only bring so much because you got a budget.
Right. No one's coming up to you going, hey, write me a poem for $20.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a little harder, I guess, as a writer. Not that I'm a writer yet. But, yeah, it's definitely interesting if it's something you've ever thought about as far as going and, you know, trying to participate on the exhibitor side of a con. It's definitely something you might want to read and, you know, think about.
It's one of the... Yeah. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say that I really like that he broke down numbers, like, in that article. I think that was really super helpful for people.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things where I was reading it going, all these people, they go... I mean, no offense, I get the cosplay thing. I don't get it at the same time. But a lot of people go in their cosplay things not to buy, not to support really any of the independent artists who are trying to make a living at this. They're there to be seen and maybe network, which I understand and I can appreciate it. But at the same time, the core reason for this whole thing is the, you know, the artists trying to get them... themselves out there, and
yeah.
I feel like, and it's been said so many times in so many different ways by so many different people, that it's called Comic-Con, but it's such a backseat to all the pomp and circumstance now.
Yeah.
And I mean, we definitely experienced it from the other side of the booth last year when we went, because, you know, for every person that stopped by to say hello or just ask us what we were even doing there, 50 million other people were walking by in their Sailor Moon costumes trying to get pictures taken. So,
well, and that's another thing, you know, going back to the Wizard World thing, you know, we, you know, you had a choice of, you know, just a booth or a premiere booth, which obviously is going to cost more money, but they put you close to the entrance. And, you know, not knowing any better, we sprung for that. But there were a lot of times during the day where the lobby just fills up with, you know, cosplay people who aren't even there to come into the convention. They just sit in the lobby and, you know, at any given time, you know, we're sitting at the booth, you know, picking our noses, and there's literally 400 or 500 people out in the lobby just taking pictures and hanging out with all the costumed heroes. And it's like, yeah, that's all fine and good, but I paid really good money for all of you people to, like, be here. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like if you're going to spend $75 for a ticket, why would you spend hours in the lobby just taking pictures of people?
I kind of was thinking it must be similar to being a touring band who's crossing through the same city as Snapcase, and you get put on the same bill, and there's 500 people at the show, but only 10 are watching your band, and you're trying to, like, make enough record and t-shirt sales to make it 5 hours to the next city, and no one came to see the other bands other than Snapcase. Nothing. I mean, not trying
everyone
to...
Everyone hangs out outside.
I'm not trying to point the finger at Snapcase. You know, they had a big fan base at that period in time, and that happened very often, where they'd play and there'd be like 600 people and 500 of them you've never seen in your life, and everybody's in the bar, everybody's outside, second Snapcase comes on, all of a sudden the place is packed, and you're like, what the hell just happened?
You know, yeah.
My daughter handed me something to throw away.
Oh, okay. You know, it's just, I mean, I understand that you have to, you know, compensate celebrities for being there, but like, I just don't understand why you're going to make creators spend, you know, $2,000-$3,000 for a booth when, you know, when you're bringing in all these big celebrities, you're going to make way more than that in your ticket sales. Like, why not give the people who are there to showcase their work a break? Like, you know, like you said, it's a comic convention that totally has almost nothing to do with comics anymore, and it's kind of, you know, that's what happens when you let the corporations take over. I mean, not trying to be funny, but also that's kind of what's going on here. You know, I mean, it's turned into a gigantic money-making thing, you know, and it just, I feel like it takes away from people who are really trying to make a living.
Yeah, I don't think I've been to San Diego since late 90s, so my perspective on it's certainly very skewed. Like, I think maybe the first Blade movie was coming out last time I went to one, which was kind of the beginning of the whole, you know, superhero movie thing. Because I think that was one of the first, like, actual successful ones. You know, I think that was the same year that, or maybe the year after the David Hasselhoff Nick Fury movie came out. I don't know if you remember that.
I do actually. Now I only heard about it maybe a year ago, but I do recall it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a TV movie, I think. But anyway, back then it was not like it is now. I mean, I went to Emerald City Comic Con with my family here recently. And you're talking about the lobby. I mean, there's ads through those lobbies. The one in Seattle, you have to go up like 3 floors of escalators in a line and then into a giant, like, room that's just there to receive tickets. Yep. And then you go through like a giant, you know, serpentine line. Through there before you get there. And you're sitting there, you know, looking at all these ads that people have obviously, you know, paid to put up. And, you know, I know there's a lot of money coming to that thing. I mean, it's giant business now.
Yeah.
It's true. I mean, I don't know. You'd think there'd be a break, at least for maybe even just local creators or something. Like, you know, this is C2E2. Like, Chicago people should either have first dibs or maybe even a discounted rate to be able to get into an exhibiting area or something, or maybe they even sponsor, you know, newer upcoming people to add a little bit of extra credibility to what is becoming just a thing to pimp whatever new AMC show is coming out that next fall. So, right. You know, I don't know, maybe there's probably some good ideas in there, but unless those ideas are generating a lot of money, or at least generating a lot of value in some way, whether it's money or credibility or exposure, I don't see a lot of the people in charge caring.
Oh, no. As long as they get a profit, they don't care what goes on.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue to people the value of something like that maybe isn't as tangible. Like, you know, have these people that do these small things come in and do that, but like small zines or small run comics or whatever. But then, you know, Seattle, we have Short Run now, which is a super indie comic convention for people who make your own comics and, you know, little cool fanzines and just kind of the weirder stuff. So a lot of the weirder stuff I like. But even that's kind of starting to get sort of big and kind of, you know, more difficult to get into. So,
Yeah, we have a few of those around here as well. We have little, like, small town shows, and then there's also Chicago Zine Fest, I think, in April or May. There's also not really a comic con, but there's one in April in the suburbs called Windy City Pulp and Paper Convention. It's a whole convention for detective novels, noir films, old movie posters, and
that's cool.
I think it's the only one, or there's only a handful of these types of conventions. I know it's not very big, but I'm actually gonna go this year, so I'm pretty psyched because they're doing a panel on crime comics, which I'm pretty excited to go check out. I think they said last year they were excited because it exploded to 1,200 guests over the entire weekend. So. That should tell you how small this thing is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, yeah, some people don't think about how big San Diego Comic-Con is. I mean, that place that they have that is where the Republicans held their national convention in, like, you know, 96 or whatever. Like, it's a giant building.
Yeah, and then they want to move to Anaheim to fill up more space, I heard.
That's silly. They should just do another one. Every suburb has their own Comic-Con now.
Yeah. Too bad that we don't have one here in Tinley. I mean, there's a nice convention hall that never gets used.
You could probably start one.
True, but, you know, I'm sure it's going to cost me money to do it, you know, and until I hit the lotto.
I'm sure Bob Fingerman will fly out for it.
Well, done and done. he'll be our only panel.
Yeah.
You got any thoughts there, Chris, or you fall asleep on us?
No, I'm good.
Sweet.
I read it too and everything, and you know, I definitely shed some light, or you know, that wasn't really aware of. And, you know, I just never gave it that much thought, but I didn't realize like how much they are on their own, and not getting like any kind of help from you know their respective companies. But then again, they do. You know, most of them do. Work for multiple companies.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm sure that's part of the problem. Like, I'm sure you know a lot of these bigger companies only.
I'm surprised that they don't. They still don't get any help. Like it's all like, okay, well, if you want to go, you can go.
Yeah.
We're not helping you out though.
Yeah, I think that goes back to people not really working for. The comic company as much as they're probably just contracted
well,
for the
yeah,
certain
books. Yeah,
well,
then books. I can actually understand then why you know, the whole... Why Todd McFarlane and all them finally just said, you know, forget it. Let's just start a company and whoever wants to write for it, they retain the rights to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that must have been weird back then. I mean, early 90s, seeing, like, having Todd McFarlane kind of be there for the... what seemed to be like this kind of resurgence of comics when he's sitting there doing Spider-Man and being like, wait, I don't own any of this. Like all this work I'm doing is nothing. It means nothing to me. And I'm getting paid the same amount as if this comic was popular, if it wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, rightfully so. I mean, that's what Spider-Man's what Stan Lee's creation.
Yeah. Him and Steve Ditko.
Yeah. So you can't really, I guess you can't really blame them. So, I mean, so that's, no. You know, kind of why they said, well, okay, well then, you know, I understand.
You know who I
understand when we leave.
You know who I've never seen at a con?
Who's that?
Kingstone Media.
Oh, is this the next thing?
Wow, that was probably smooth. The most terrible segue I've ever heard you do.
Why not? They're a comic book creator.
No, I know, but I'm just talking about the segue itself was just one of the worst you've ever done.
I don't know. I think I've done way worse than that.
All right.
We'll do an overrated, underrated of your segues later.
If you guys want to go listen to all of them and find them, because I'm pretty sure there's a couple per episode.
That's too much work.
In episode 6. Whoa. My awesome, terrible segue, Kingstone Media wants to be the Marvel of Christian comics. And in my opinion, seeing as though there's not a lot of competition, I think they can pretty much already take that title. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of strictly Christian comics companies, but I mean, I don't know. Have you guys looked at any of their books?
No. I didn't know they existed.
That question.
The first page I clicked on, the first book is The Lamb and the Fuhrer. It's a.
Oh, I thought you were going to say The Lamb and the Goat.
No, The Lamb and the Fuhrer.
Have fused as one.
It is a book about after Hitler commits suicide, he has a conversation with Jesus.
Oh my God.
That's really weird.
It becomes yes. Jewish.
And then, like, there's a whole series that they do called 101 Questions, and it's basically they try to rationalize all the ridiculous stories in the Bible. Like, the volume
all
one.
Christian apologetics. And...
Yeah. It's like the volume one is, like, you know, Cain and his wife. I don't remember the exact, but, you know, story behind that. But then the second part of that first book is The Bible and Dinosaurs. And the third part of that one is Jesus after crucifixion. You know,
I actually didn't put this up to laugh at it.
They talk about angels, demons, pets in heaven, the end of the world. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's wow.
That's just sad.
Yeah. I mean, they go through all the stories in the Bible and try to justify why they're real. I would love to read some of these, but I don't want to like spend money on them. But I mean, it's not like they're... I mean, I don't know how hard it is, but I mean, you can buy their books on their site. You can buy the ebook off their site. You can also buy them on Amazon, iBooks, the Nook store. So, I mean, they gotta put in some kind of effort to get in all these ebook stores, right? I mean,
I'm very tempted to go to Family Christian Bookstore and see if they carry anything.
Like, just the cover alone of The Lamb and the Fuhrer is kind of funny. Not gonna. And again, you know, like you said, you're not trying to make fun of this stuff, but it kind of makes fun of itself at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, part of me wants to laugh at it. Part of me kind of wants to be a little afraid. I mean, that teaching, I mean, indoctrination is just something that happens, and that's just something I've, you know, accepted. But teaching kids, like inundating younger people with the ideas of, well, these logical fallacies where you have to, like, you know, the classic argument for ignorance. There's going to be so many things in there talking about, like, first cause of the Klan cosmological argument, where kids are going to be basically, like, reinforced with these crazy ideas of, you know, like, the, when I say the argument for ignorance, it's that whole idea of, like, well, you know, where do you think the trees came from? Where they can present these sort of shitty thoughts, I guess. Just poor critical thinking skills, and just get it in there early and give it to them in a palatable way, a little spoonful of sugar.
Did you read any of the bullet points?
No, I did not actually.
They are actually really hilarious and kind of disturbing at the same time. One of them particularly, where it says libraries have become big buyers of graphic novels to lure young readers. That almost sounds like, hey kids, I got this van full of books if you want to come in here and check them out. I mean, I know it's not their intent, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a graphic novel called 2048, The Story of America's Future, and the little synopsis is in the year 2048, scientists have created human-ape chimeras called Bumans. Basically, I'm assuming they're talking about how, you know, science is taking things too far, I would imagine.
Well,
they have one, Vladimir, the Prince of Russia. He turned from paganism to Christ and led thousands of Russians to embrace Christianity. Like, they try to turn these people into, like, almost like superheroes. It's kind of
awesome.
No, like I kind of want to read them, but I'm afraid that they exist in a weird way. And they also have one that was apparently a movie. In 2014, The Remaining, a group of college friends experienced the first 3 days after the rapture.
Yes.
Was that a movie a few years ago? Oh, my God. Like,
I know, I saw, like, I just, well, but one of my thoughts when I saw this, because I just stumbled upon the ad. I wasn't, like, looking for anything of this nature. I just stumbled on it. And all I keep thinking when I was looking at these going, how did the guys that are drawing and writing these get into comics? Like, what was their gateway? Because I don't, like we said, there's no Christian comic scene that I'm aware of until this came out. I mean, I know they used to do illustrated Bible stories back in the 50s, but I'm guessing the writers and artists are around our age, maybe even a little younger.
I don't know.
Well, you know, when I was a kid, my mom, you know, I was into hardcore and metal and stuff, and my mom has always been and will always be very super Christian. And so I had to put up with her bringing me a lot of, like, Christian metal bands.
Striper! And,
well, there's always Striper. There's always that stuff. But then there was a, couple in the early 90s. There's one called The Crucified, who were actually pretty good. And there was a band called Vengeance Rising, who were just straight up, like, brutal death metal. And even if you read the lyrics, you're like, how is this Christian? Like, all, like, it's, I guess it is because they're talking about religious stuff, and apparently they're all Christian guys. But, I mean, listening back on it, I haven't listened to it in 20-something years. And, you know, thinking back, it's probably not that good.
It's totally on your iPod right now.
Yeah. turn off that Spotify thing, lest people know what I'm listening to. 3 hours of Vengeance Rising. But they were, like, I mean, the guy's vocals sounded like Blaine from The Accused. Like, they were just filthy and awesome. And I was like, how is this Christian? My mom's like, you like it? I go, yeah, this is actually pretty rad. But, I mean, she was just looking for anything.
You wanna go to church?
No.
Yeah, don't. I, well, you know, she'd take me to, like, the good skate spots I wanted to go to if I would go to church with her. So, I would. And it made her happy. You know, and it's, I don't want to, you know, whatever, it's fine. I mean, I guess, you know, I don't, I mean, part of me cares because I, you know, I'd like to believe as many true things as possible. But the other part of me kind of is just like, whatever, you know, if that's what, if my mom wants to believe that stuff, that's fine. Go ahead. I don't want to take it from you. But yeah, she, you know, so I, but I'd listen to that and be like, you know, how did these guys get into this? Like, there's no way the guys in Vengeance Rising don't also own all the Morbid Angel and all the Deicide and, you know, all that stuff. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I mean, I know Christian rock and Christian comics probably are about as cool to me in my head, just on the surface. But I am intrigued. I kind of want to see them. Like, I'm pretty well versed in Christian apologetics, and I'd like to see how they fit those into a comic form. I mean, I'd like to, you know, I'd love to see them explain, like I said, the Kalam cosmological argument and, you know, the idea of first cause and all that. Because that's the new one, is that science has proved God is real because there's a Big Bang. Like, that's the new thing, and it's tiring.
Well, I think what's weird for me is, you know, over the years I've obviously met quite a few people, and I'll have one person who, you know, goes to church 3-4 days a week and starts telling me all kinds of weird stories and tells me that you know, dinosaurs where the dinosaur bones are a test from God to make sure you believe in the faith because they never actually existed. He put them there to test your faith. And then I talked to another Christian who goes to a different church, and he's like, no, dude, there's dinosaurs in the Bible. I'm like, how do you guys have two absolutely different stories here?
Well,
I think there's 30,000 different Christian denominations that all differ on all different things. I mean, my mom believes in evolution, so... You know, like you're saying that, like, ape human chimera, that just seems like a very not so subtle way to stick a little, you know, knife in the idea of evolution.
Right.
Like that one comic. Like, I really want to actually read that one really badly. I bet that's amazing.
2048, for those of you that forgot.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pimp David Rubin's podcast again because I'm finding myself liking it more and more. But the episode I listened to today was with this guy from Montreal. He's a professor, Concordia University. I don't know if that's in Montreal or not. Name is God Sod. Weird name, because, you know, he's an atheist. But they were talking about, you know, all this sort of thing, and they were going over the thing. The long game is what's important. Good ideas will eventually defeat bad ideas. It's not about winning the battles. It's about winning the war overall. And not winning the war does not mean shouting down your enemies and so on and so forth. But they touched on the point of, they were talking about science versus religion, and this guy said, why is it that we've abandoned the scientific and industrial principles in the Bible, but not the faith part of it? Like, you know, any methods of constructing buildings or building roads that were present at that time, we've long ago, those are silly. Why would we do that? That's stupid. But then when we talk about, you know, talking trees and burning bushes, we're like, no, that part's that we're good with that.
Yeah.
And it was like, again, one of those little things that I went, I'm like, that's pretty good. Don't really know if that has anything to do with anything. I'm just saying that it's just interesting how, yeah, because they also actually said the thing about there's like 10,000 different religions, and everyone is an atheist for 990 or 9,999 of those.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a really interesting company. I think I need to go see what they're all about.
Yeah, they might have just made a few sales for me, some begrudging sales. I just really want to know.
I'm gonna buy these. I'm not gonna like it, but I'm gonna buy these. Yeah, I'm just gonna look for their booth tomorrow.
Oh, is that going on this weekend? Is that what you said?
Yes. Well, I figure this comes out Monday, so it's kind of like the whole like whoa.
Gotcha. You know,
right. Nailed it. So yeah, that ought to be interesting. So if we ever do go down that rabbit hole, we'll be sure to discuss. I think that could be interesting. Could be long, but it could be good.
Yeah, yeah. Let me know.
Well, maybe we should pick one for our number one. Pick one of these weird graphic novels, and then I'll pick it up, and then we can have a willy nilly good time talking about it.
I'll let you know.
That would be great.
I'll let you know when I find $20 on the street.
All right. Well, I suppose that's going to run us right into overrated, underrated, which was aspects of being 40, almost 40, over 40. I know I'm so near. I'm not close yet. But, you know, hey.
So stop doing that.
It's not my fault you're 40 and I'm not. But
I'm only 40 for the last week.
Right. So.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm just happy that I was able to talk my coworkers into not celebrating my birthday.
God, it's the worst, isn't it? They all try to like awkwardly sing and bring out cake. It's like, dude, go away.
They actually abided by my wishes.
Nice.
Nothing happened. It was the greatest.
See,
thing
I make
ever.
Sure that never happens because I always take off on my birthday. One time I didn't, and I was so dreading walking into my office, but it was fine. And I was like, thank you. And then I went out to get a cup of coffee. I come back. My office door is closed. And, like, the door has a window. So I don't know why they closed the door. But there are two people in there, like, putting up streamers and balloons. Like, oh, my God, we totally forgot. I'm like, I was kind of banking on that. Thanks for ruining my day. But, anywho, overrated aspect of being almost 40. I feel like, you know, everyone's like, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, man, I can't wait to be an adult. It's going to be awesome. I could do what I want. And I feel like my attitude, my demeanor pretty much hasn't changed since I, like, you pretty much still are as clueless as you were as when you were a kid. And you realize that all the petty stuff that goes on when you're a kid, that stuff goes on even worse with all the people that are your own age.
I defer to the story I told before we went on about my coworker, and I won't say anymore.
Yeah, I just feel like the people who are the most childish are the ones that are supposed to be an adult, and it's baffling a little bit. So I don't remember exactly what that's going to fall under, but the whole like being an adult, it's in and of itself is just overrated.
Yeah,
it was so much nicer to be a kid and not have to go to work every single day to have somebody take 90% of your paycheck,
ride your skateboard into an oncoming bus and live.
Right. Yeah. Now I'd be like. I'd lay on the ground just for like a week. I'm like, oh, don't move me. Whatever.
Yeah, I know. I absolutely. I was invincible and I never needed to eat. But if I did, I could eat like anything and be fine.
Yeah.
That was great.
Now I eat like half of what I used to eat. And it's like, well, there's another 10 pounds. That rules.
Well, that kind of slides into mine. My overrated is talking about ailments in a relatable way. Let me tell you about my back problems, my digestive issues, my vision's going. That's all everybody talks about all the time. Well, my sciatica's acting up. Well, let me tell you about my balding. And let me tell you about my ear thing. And it's like, this is all everybody ever talks about.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, and I find myself doing it now. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, my back's been killing me. Oh, I don't know what's going on with this side cramp that I got. I might be dying.
I don't know why I was waiting for you to say side boob.
I'm constantly, like, looking at myself in the mirror going, ugh.
Man, when is a good time for a man to start wearing a bra?
Yeah, I just, every time I look in the mirror, I'm just like, ugh, what happened? And then I remember I stopped doing everything, and I go, oh, that's what happened.
Oh, I traded skateboard for couch. That's that. Yeah, nailed
that's
it.
That's what I was going to say, dude. You should never have stopped moving.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
It happens.
You forget how to kickflip, and that's pretty much the end of your life.
I had a dream this morning, by the way. A skateboarding dream. It happened every once in a while, and it was fantastic.
Do you ever have a skateboarding dream and then kick yourself awake as you're like actually trying to ollie in your sleep?
No, never.
I've had those.
I feel like there's always a point in that dream when I realize that I'm like, oh shit, yeah, I can't do this stuff anymore. And I know I'm dreaming, but I'm able just to hold on for a little while longer. Get a little bit of that, what do they call that? You know, when you're like semi-conscious in your dream.
Rapid eye movement?
No. There's a what would you say?
Rapid eye movement?
No. That's when you're in a deep sleep.
That movie Rich Licklider movie Waking Life is all about it.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the term for it. It's some sort of conscious dreaming. People are supposed to be able to kind of work your mind into being able to do that. So then once you're in your dream, you have total control of everything that's happening, so you can like fly and fuck people or do whatever you want in your dream. It's supposed to be this like holy grail of human consciousness. Of course, it's never really lucid dreaming. That's what it's called.
Yes. Okay, I've heard of that.
Lucid dreaming, yes. I feel like in my skateboarding dream, I had a few seconds of lucid dreaming there where I was like, wait, I can't. I was never able to do all these tricks. But yeah.
All right, overrated. You want to take it away from there? You might as well.
Sure.
Yeah, I had one.
All right, I know.
Well, go ahead, because I just forgot it now.
Oh, you forgot it?
Yeah. I seriously had it.
Actually, mine was pretty much the same as Brian's. So
I honestly thought there's no one's picking this.
Yeah, no, it's...
It's a phenomenon.
It's sad.
Oh, it came to me because I had another coworker that I had a really uncomfortably long conversation about digestive issues, and it was like I was just like trying to be empathetic, and at the same time I'm just like, what is happening? What happened to me? What happened to everybody? I'm like, oh my god, it's just gonna get worse.
I think honestly it's a way to like comfort yourself by and comfort the other people who you know are
you're
sharing
both going
this
through it.
Yeah, because it's something you can't do anything about. I mean, even my healthy friends who are like mountain climbers and stuff are still like, yeah, well, you know, my arms. If I go mountain climbing, I got to rest now for a few days. I can't just do like I used to because my shoulder's going out or something. It's like, geez, man, it's like
there it is. That's my overrated.
Oh, was it?
It's basically you feel you're tired. You can't stay up past like 11.
You could stay up till 11? Wow.
I know. Even that's pushing it. And, like, if you want to do anything, it's like you got to really stretch and prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Not like before, you could just, like, get on your skateboard and just go skate. Now I have to work out to skateboard.
Yeah, I drink. I don't drink as much as I used to for this next reason. Maybe this will be mine, but... hangovers now last like 2 days, maybe longer. Like,
yeah, I mean,
it used to be just like get a hangover and just go eat some tater tots and you're fine. Like those days are over. Like now it's like all day later that
night.
You
also can't eat whatever you want.
No more going to the Wing Dome and getting 5-alarm wings. I mean, those
and
that would kill,
like,
I would
at
die.
2 a.m. and like, yeah, dude, look at me. I'm fine. You wake up and the next day you're like, I feel great. I'm still skinny.
Yeah, no. If I did that, if I ate something that spicy, like in a large amount, I'd probably die. Like actually, I'd have to consider how long it took to get home, so I didn't die behind the wheel.
I was gonna say you'd probably propel yourself out of bed by all the rocket propulsion gas.
No, I know my stomach would just fill with blood, and I just turn into a fountain and then expire.
Okay, well that's not good.
Yeah, no way.
Well, I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but I still have never been hungover. Not that I was ever a big drinker, but there's been some times where I was definitely like almost blackout, and I've never been hungover. But at the same time, like, I can pretty much eat whatever I want, and I'm not going to... I mean, I'll get fatter, but...
Yeah, I was going to say...
It's not going to, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, man, I'm wrecked. Like, yeah, that never has... That doesn't happen to me. I can eat whatever the hell I want, and I'm just like, yeah, let's do this.
That's like a moment-to-moment occurrence for me.
Let's go get more.
But as far as the hangover thing, I got drunk and hungover in the same day with no sleep in between.
Yes, you did.
And that was
no sex.
That went from the best day ever to the worst day ever in a matter of 2 hours. 1 minute I'm in the parking lot playing air guitar and singing Rainbow in the Dark, and 2 hours later I'm laying on the couch going, I think I'm going to die. Oh, my God. So, yeah.
Okay, moving on to underrated, and it might sound like it's going to contradict my first one, but being able to do whatever the hell you want without, and this, of course, goes because, I mean, no big secret, I am single. So when I want to come home on, say, when I come home on Monday nights and I just want to turn on Elder Scrolls for like 5 straight hours, no one's going to bitch at me. It's just, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. So that's kind of like, you know.
That's really impressive.
Kind of, yeah, right. So what do you do? I play Elder Scrolls all day, every day, because, yeah, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, and you know what else you could do whatever you want? You know what else you can do? Not have sex.
No, I do plenty of that on my own just fine, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
That's it's like, not like it's on the table, though. Let's put it that way.
Whoa.
It's not worth it.
What's not worth it?
Nothing.
Please edit that out.
Now, mine is, my underrated is mining enjoyment out of small things.
Like, you want to elaborate?
Well, yeah. I mean, when you're younger and, like, again, you have all the energy in the world. You know, you're like, I got to go skate for 3 hours. I got to go to 5 shows tonight. I'm going to go to 1 show. I'm going to go to the next one. I'm going to go to the next one. I'm going to play one after that. And then as you get older, you're just like, ah, man, I went to the comic shop today, and that's it. And that was, like, the best Saturday ever. And because that's really, like, all you got to look forward to, at least me. So, you know, I don't get to do all the things that I used to do or want to do anymore. So whenever I get to do anything, no matter how stupid or small it is,
yeah, I agree
for myself.
Going to the grocery store is like exciting now.
Exactly. That's sad, but it's true. Like, I actually get up on Saturday, I'm like, I'm going to go to the grocery store while I still have time.
Yes!
And it's like, why do I like this so much? What the fuck? There used to be times when I would call in sick to go see Guilt and then deal with being unemployed the next day. Now I'm like, fuck, I really need bread.
I ditched class to go see Bloodlet.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't do that sort of thing. Like, I wouldn't fathom, like, calling in sick to work to go see a movie or whatever. So, like, when I do get to go to the movie now, which is, like, 4 times a year if I'm lucky, it's like, I'm going to the movies! Yes! Like, I went to 3 concerts last year. I used to go to 3 shows in 2 days. Like, I would go see Botch in the afternoon and Los Crudos at night, and the next day I'd stay down in the city and go see Bloodlet or whatever. And then now it's like, holy crap, I went to a show. It's the first time in 5 years.
I wish that was actually happening right now, because I would actually go do that.
I don't think I'd have the energy. Like, literally standing for 2 straight bands, and I'm like, I need a nap. Oh, my God.
I do like Botch, but I think I would have to raise Bloodlet up just a little bit more.
For me, if I see a band once, that's it. I'm good. Because standing for that long is just not my favorite thing anymore. And I'm too old to get in the pit, if that even exists anymore. I don't think it does. The last couple of shows I went to looked like I was at a D&D convention.
That's awesome.
D&D. I'm going to say... doing all the nerdy things that I wanted to do when I was a kid, but just didn't have the attention for, and do now. Like building models.
Yeah.
Like when I was a kid, I would always see those models, and I'd be like, yeah, dude, I totally want to do it. And my dad would get me one, and I'd start on it, and I'm like, eh, fuck this. Now I totally have the patience and and all it took was me turning 40. I don't know why it's so much easier to do it at 40 than it was at 10, but
that means mentally I turned 40 when I turned 30. That's depressing.
Like, I get psyched about doing models. Like, I got a new kit in last week, and I was like, you know, that was like that was like going to the grocery store.
It's weird when, like, the grocery store is like the pinnacle of excitement to where you're like comparing other things to it.
I know, Brendan's like, I gotta go grocery shopping, you wanna come with? I'm like, yes!
That's awesome.
I'm gonna go there, I'm gonna pick out some ice cream, and...
Oh.
We go every day in my family to our local grocery store, I think.
For real?
I think so. Maybe 6 days a week.
I would not mind doing that myself if I didn't have to, like, come home and take care of my dog right away from work. But, like, and that's the thing that sucks about living by yourself, you know, like, trying to do like one weekly shopping run, like, dude, I don't know what I want to eat every day, and then when I make, it's, you know, I'm trying to cook for one person. Like, I'd much rather just go every day on my way home and be like, oh, I'm gonna have a sweet potato and let me get a chicken breast from the, you know, the butcher or whatever, you know. Yeah. That'd be so much easier. But instead, I gotta try and plan all that out during the week, and it doesn't work very well lately.
I'm not good with that either, because Brenda, when we go shopping, Brenda's like, well, what do you want to have? I'm like, what do you mean, what do I want to have? Well, what do you want to have to eat this week? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's super tough.
I can't tell
tough.
You what I want to eat in like 4 days.
You have now listened to the grocery roast.
It's an important part of all of our lives.
And she's like, well, I want to plan it. I'm like, it's Friday right now. I don't know what I want next Tuesday.
No, I agree.
I mean, it's wise if it's frugal to do that, but it's super hard.
Yeah, it is hard. Like, I don't. If I tell you something now, like, maybe when that day comes, I'm going to be like, yeah, you know what? I don't want that.
Yeah. No, I do that all the time because I'm like, oh, I'll totally always eat this. And then, like, I'll be at work and it'll be lunchtime and it'll be like, hey, you guys want to go get this? I'm like, well, I was going to make that for dinner. But, yeah, I mean, if that's where you're all going, okay, fine. You know, it just happens.
Or if you do make something like that and you eat it, like, for the next couple of days – then when you're lunchtime at work, you're like, yeah, I'm not really excited about lunch. Why? I brought the leftovers I've been eating for the last 2 days.
Right, yeah. I mean, I've gotten better at trying to make sure I only cook for one person, but it's not easy. So,
yeah, I've never lived alone, so I don't know.
Yeah, just, you know, rub a little more salt on that. Thanks. It's cool.
No, I mean, it's
totally awesome that you're by yourself all the time. But
no, I've actually always wanted to.
Yeah,
my family's all here. They probably don't want to hear that, but I've always, like, you know, I lived with my parents and I lived with roommates and then I got married. Like,
it has its perks, but it definitely has its drawbacks at times too. I mean, it's just, I would imagine, you know, just like anything, you know, sometimes you just need a little break, I guess.
It would be cool for like a little bit, because I've gotten a taste of being by myself, like, especially when, like, when Brenda would have to go out of town for something at work or whatever, or she went to go see her sister, I was by myself for a couple of days. So,
man, we're
it's cool
putting Chris to sleep here.
I know. Well, maybe I'll finish up real quick then.
No. I just happen to yawn.
I would say that, although I don't know if the milestone of 40 matters, I do feel like I'm finally getting to that age where I have enough perspective to kind of finally know when things are good as opposed to just kind of think they're good. And in that way, I mean, like, coffee or food or, you know, wine or beer, whatever, like, this is kind of the age where I feel like the peer pressure around people kind of like telling you what's good or whatnot kind of dissolves a little bit more. Music, I don't really count that way, 'cause I feel like the world we all kind of grew up in, like, we were sort of forced to make something good out of nothing. But, you know, for like the level in which I appreciate things, I feel like is greater now. I feel like I have better perspective on things. I've had enough bad stuff and I've had enough good stuff now to sort of know which one's good. Like, I think a few episodes back we talked about scotch.
Yes. And
I don't know, I don't know names or labels very well, but you know, I can now taste one and kind of, you know, get like, oh, okay, yeah, this is what I like because it has these qualities, as opposed to where I've been like, what's this label? Yeah, this is the one I like. Like, so, you know, I feel like I have more perspective on things.
I gotta get all philosophical, make me feel all dumb about my answers. I'm all like, dude, video games and being a kid are awesome.
Be more.
Well, that is awesome, though. That's what I mean. I mean, when you're that's actually kind of what you were saying. Because when you're a kid, you don't realize how rad it is that you can, like, you don't have to go to work, you don't have to do these things, but you can't. But you know, and your parents used to be like, "Oh, you don't know how good you have it," and it's like, "Yeah, I don't know because I can't possibly know."
Right. Yeah.
Just like you couldn't have possibly known when you were my age. I mean, just the way it works.
Well, yeah. I mean, I find myself saying things that my parents used to tell me when I was a kid.
Yeah, and you're like,
I say
oh,
it to my
it.
Son. I'm like, huh? I'm like, where have you heard that before? I'm like, oh, ew.
Yeah, I mean, because you learned it, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess that's kind of that's my perspective.
I like it.
I like it too.
Did Chris go on?
Underrated? Yeah, I did.
Okay, we ranted a lot. Just tune in next week when we talk about laundry. So. Let's move this into best thing ever, and we'll leave you guys alone for the week. My best thing ever, which is part of the reason why I haven't really read anything this week, I've taken my reading time for the week and put it towards the fact that I have been guitarless for the last 3, 4, 5 years. I don't know, somewhere around there. And I went out the other day and finally purchased a brand new guitar. Yay! Ooh. I've been playing that instead of reading all week, and I got an awesome new pedal with it because I figured if I'm going to spend a lot of money, why not add some cool effects, right? Right. So,
what'd you get?
The guitar is an Ibanez AM73B, I believe. 73 okay. Or 74? 73B. It's a semi-hollow body Artcore line. I've been kind of looking at them for a few years now, and I finally just said, screw it, let's do this. And then the pedal is like a Digitech. It's got like 7 different pedals built in, and you can, you know, select through them and stuff. It's really kind of badass that I'm still trying to figure out. But the simple fact that I can plug into the pedal, plug my headphones into the pedal, and just listen to myself play all night without plugging into my half stack, beautiful. It's pretty much awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I still suck, but I mean, I'm still having a lot of fun, so that's all that matters.
That's great.
Nailed it.
Stop saying nailed it, please.
Can't help it. I'm super pumped, and as soon as this is done, I'm going to play some more.
Mine's in the same vein. Got kind of a modestly bitchin' bonus from work last week, and I finally was able to pay cash for a 6-piece Alesis electronic drum set that I've been eyeballing for about a year and a half now. It's coming to my work tomorrow.
I'm going to laugh when it doesn't fit in your car.
It'll fit. I'll make it fit. This is the 7th drum set I bought, but this is the first one I bought in almost 10 years, so I'm pretty psyched. Because I haven't been able to play much.
Are you going to make the sex with it?
No, I'm going to play music on it, hopefully. You know, we'll see.
Play some sexy jams on it.
I'm just going to play some, what's that band? Steely Dan. See how that goes. No, I'm just psyched because I, you know, don't get to play much these days, so looking forward to hopefully playing more. Maybe record some music in the future.
Right on. My best thing for the week. Oh, jeez. I think I'm still going to have to go with the Division. Still playing it. Still liking it. Still loving it.
That Tom Clancy game?
Yeah.
I see a lot of people playing that. I might have to look at it.
Yeah, I dig it. It's cool.
How's that review coming on it? People.
What, Tom Clancy?
Yep.
I gotta play some more of it, dude.
Mm-hmm. 90 hours ain't enough?
I didn't play no 90 hours. I played only 15 hours so far.
Yeah.
I'm only level 10.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's not much, really.
No, I agree. How about you, Damien?
I will go keep with the instrument thing. Best thing ever for me is not something I bought because I can't afford it, But this week, Electro Harmonix put out a pedal called the Mel 9, and it is the coolest thing.
I want to say, did you post that on Facebook?
Yes, I did.
Then that's where I read about it.
Yeah. It's all this right, pedal man. That makes your guitar sound like a Mellotron, like those old
yes.
keyboards that like the Beatles and stuff would play, where you have to put those like kind of flexi discs into them, and that's where the sounds were stored on. I played one once years ago. A guy got one at a thrift store for like $10.
That's incredible. Those things are super expensive.
Yeah, they're really crazy expensive, but so I got to play with his, and it was really super cool. But now they have this pedal, which essentially you can, like, they have a little video for the pedal that starts up, and you hear what sounds like a Beatles song with like the orchestra coming in, and you're like, oh, this is a sample of what it's gonna get to sound like, you know, but not as good, of course. And then it flashes to the guy just actually playing it on a guitar, and I was like, oh my god, that's what it is. It's the guitar making that sound. That's amazing. Like, I was I'm just really blown away by how cool it sounds, how well it tracks. I mean, you can bend notes on it, and it doesn't do like the be-do-do-do-do-do, as it's trying to like find the note. Do you want me to do that again?
Yeah, I kind of do. That was kind of neat.
Be-do-do-do-do. I have an old octave pedal that I use a lot, and I'll turn it on to like just like let a note drone out because it can't find the note very well. Like, it kind of dips and, you know, kind of moves around the note a little bit, and it kind of creates this nice little like subtle texture, and I like it for that fact. But this does the exact opposite, where it just completely nails what it's supposed to be doing, and it's super cool. It's like $300, and I'll probably not be able to afford it for a very long time, but it right now is one of the only things I'm thinking about, besides the horrible prospects of the presidential election.
So you're having Trump nightmares as well?
Yeah, I am.
Years
ago, I thought that a few months back, I would think I would be just being silly, but it's becoming more and more of a reality to me.
It's so scary. Wow. So we're all apparent music nerds, except for Chris, who just wants to do video games. So, that being said, I think that will wrap us up for the week. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can follow Brian at Pure Rock Fury. You can follow Chris at SkateXEdge. You can follow Damian at Damian Johnston. And you can find all of our shows at ComicRoast.com. If you're in Chicago, well, I guess it's too late to announce that, so never mind. Don't forget to check out ReviewAndRoast.com and join in the fun over there. Until, we'll see you next week.